Welcome back. James E. Clarkson is our guest. He was the Washington State MUFON director for many years. He's now the chief investigator, the lead investigator for EPIC. He left MUFON in January over basically a personality conflict. It's really inexplainable, as far as I know. James, I just don't quite understand all the secrecy.
Well, I think there's like two or three good reasons why secrecy keeps growing. Okay, one of them is, and I have to say ironically, that the man who nailed it was one of the greatest military leaders we've ever had, and also a Republican and President of the United States, I'm referring, of course, to Dwight David Eisenhower's parting speech to the American people, where he warned us about the peril of the military-industrial complex. In fact, he coined the phrase. And unfortunately, nobody listened to the warning. And there's every indication that the military-industrial complex is doing extremely well, even in a bad economy. They don't seem to even slow down.
James, I listened to that speech again recently. And one of the things that really struck me was the fact that in that speech, he said, as long as the military-industrial complex finds that wars are profitable, we'll have wars. Pretty good commentary. Now let's get back to MUFON. And have we covered everything that on why you left?
No, I would just say that. For me, it was, you know, a straw that broke the camel's back situation, and I walked out. And when I did, I just discovered, you know, so much of what you've already disclosed to the public through interviews and what is now becoming common knowledge. And the only hope I see for MUFON is that they're going to have to become more representative and become truly transparent. And I think some of them are going to need to take some customer service training. I'm sorry.
James, is a nice way of putting it. They do need some public relations training. I've been trying to figure out this whole thing, and it just looks like it's more nefarious than it is, probably simply because these people, you know, they have it. It's my way or hit the highway, and I don't think that's what you need at the top of an organization that basically is for the public to report and investigate UFOs. It just seems like it's pretty suspicious. Don't you think so?
I'm very suspicious, and to be honest, this is where, unfortunately, I have to say there's been some failed leadership, because, you know, I remember when Chase was telling her story, and this guy, Chuck, was all bent out of shape because he was one of the original seven, and, you know, I get no respect and all of that. Well, the biggest offense there is that I don't know why there wasn't an investigation into how he treated her and why he came on that way.
Well, they probably have named him already to the board of directors. Just hasn't they haven't told me. They don't talk to me much about it anymore. We'll see at the convention, the symposium. You know, the whole thing is just really strange. About the star team, Chuck claimed that he was on the original seven-member star team before Bigelow, way before Bigelow. Well, that's impossible. He's only been a member of MUFON for 4 years, but before Bigelow. And I asked Clifford about it, Clifford Cliff, the international director, in the interview, and he said, no, I don't think so, about whether or not there was a star team before Bigelow. And then he wrote me an email and said, hey, I'm hearing that there might have been. Now, Angela Joyner has written me, and she names three or four names of people who were on that team before Bigelow.
Exactly.
It just seems like nobody at the top seems to know much about anything that's happening. Who's in charge?
Exactly.
That's my question.
And I think there could be some other, I guess before we leave that subject, the only other questions I would like to see answered, I don't know, for instance, here's something that my, I guess my investigator side coming out, I'll just bare my soul. I've always wondered who pays for the computer and exactly where it resides and who all has access aside from MUFON. Those are questions I would like to know the answers to. I don't have answers.
Well, actually, I asked Clifford about that on the air, and he said, no, it wasn't. I thought it was in one of the director's homes. And he says, no, it's in Colorado, and they're using the cloud technology. Are you familiar with the cloud, you know, computing?
The cloud system?
It's not very secure. That's the big rap about it. I don't care if it's Apple or Amazon or whomever has the cloud. It's full of security problems. From what I hear, we don't use it just because of that. Yeah, I guess this fellow who does all of the technology for them, Chuck, I guess he suggested the cloud. I don't know.
And that's precisely why I personally, on at least for my computer, they're going to have to do a lot of convincing with me before I'm going to put all my stuff in the cloud.
Yeah, we don't use the cloud.
I'm not going to until it becomes way better than it is now.
So it's possible they have eavesdroppers and the board of directors doesn't, well, they're not aware of it. But, I mean, all of these questions coming up, don't you think they'd be asking questions by now themselves? I mean, after all, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Well, certainly there is. And I don't, it would only take one member of the board of director who is, shall we say, serving another agenda.
I agree with you, James. That's the thing that's really been evident to me over the years doing conspiracy shows. It doesn't take a vast conspiracy. It only takes one or two people in the right place in the loop, and they can pull it off.
And then there's another thing that has gone on that I think is more general and also does not serve MUFON well. I have come to refer to MUFON as corporate ufology. And by that I mean everybody signing non-disclosure agreements and you only serve as a volunteer, you're an at-will employee, and you got to have a criminal background check. And all of, I mean, talk about wanting to take all the fun out of ufology.
Now you're getting down to what I think is wrong with MUFON. I mean, this background check BS, I mean, come on. You know, a criminal can see a UFO and might even crack the case.
Right. and you get into all these other questions. If some guy got busted for marijuana 10 years ago and he now wants to be a UFO investigator, are we supposed to turn him away?
Yeah, you know, in the penal system, this rehabilitation has become a bad word. And I thought that's really what prison was about. But that's another issue.
Computer records, which make it easy for people to respond without thinking.
You got a good point. Got a good point completely.
Well, Clifford Cliff brought some of that in himself, and we've talked about that off the record. But, I just disagree. I think it's a volunteer organization. You're supposed to take volunteers. Just so much happening. So much. I mean, if it's not an intelligence operation, then why? What's happening? I mean, it just appears that there's something going on here.
I don't know. And one of the other things I find that's really odd is that I'm hearing, you know,
I had heard that, so I asked Clifford Cliff about it on the air, and he said, no, it's not true. But I think it was at one time, and he probably rescinded it. I'm not sure.
It just doesn't come across very well.
Well, I'm surprised you said that, James, but I thought the same thing. Larry Bryant just sent me an email. He says, who would have thunk it that MUFON would be operated like a business, a RICO business. I thought you would enjoy that.
Oh, as an ex-cop, I like that one.
Yeah, I knew you would. That's the reason I brought it up.
That's beautiful. I don't know. It seems the whole way that things are being run, it seems a little bit Soviet to me.
Okay, we've done enough about MUFON. I think we need to really get to some good stuff here. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about some of the cases you've investigated over the last 25 years?
Yes, the good stuff is really important. There's a number of cases that I have selected out, trying to go over and look at some of the very best cases. And there's one of them that comes to mind. There's two of them in particular that I encountered because, first off, they're in their own way, I found them very creepy, and secondly, because the witnesses seem so credible. The first one that I would like to mention occurred in a place called Umapine, Oregon, and this was back in 1983. And the gentleman who called, he waited probably 12, 13 years. And, of course, one of the first questions I always have is, well, why are you reporting it now and you didn't report it then? And he said, first off, he said, people would have thought I was crazy. Secondly, he said, my friend and I agreed we weren't going to talk about it to anybody because we didn't think anybody would believe us. And then he said that he was watching a TV documentary. The television documentaries seem to be doing a lot to stimulate people. But he saw something about black triangles, and he decided that it was time to go public. So the story that he told me, he was 47 years old at the time he made the report. Professionally, he's what you would call a millwright. Very technical background, a lot of experience assembling things, heavy machinery, etc. He and a friend are in eastern Washington, right on the border. In fact, it is just over into Oregon, south of Walla Walla, Washington. This is in the middle of summer. It's a beautiful late afternoon. They've gone fishing. They're coming back along a country road. There's nothing at all going on other than they're enjoying this beautiful day. And, of course, he made a point of saying, I never did drink very much, and we had not had anything to drink. The first thing that happened that got his attention, the way he described it, I thought was interesting because, and that it fits into some other things, he said that the air went slack. And he said there was this feeling that all of the energy had gone out of the air, and all of the natural sounds in, birds, a little breeze, insects, anything, all of that noise was muted. It was just gone. And everything went absolutely silent. What happened to him and his friend, he said the best way to describe it is to imagine yourself standing on a runway at a major airport and a 747 taxis by you, and I mean right by you. Something came by him and his friend that he swears was so close that one of them had to step out of the way and the other one was just stupefied because he thought they were going to be run over by an enormous craft that was moving right over the ground. And he had this sensation, he could see the outlines of it, but not clearly. He just knew that he was next to a massive, enormous piece of machinery. And as he put it, I was standing next to the most beautiful and fantastic thing I ever saw in my life. And I have no idea what I was looking at. And he said that the surface of this object was projecting the background behind it. So, in other words, his perspective on it, it was like standing too close to a television set, where the image, you're so close that you can sort of, it pixelates.
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever this thing was, it was very, very well camouflaged. And I also know from doing some reading that our military is experimenting with that kind of camouflage, that it things that can project whatever's behind it, so that when you look at it, you don't see the object, you see whatever you would see if it wasn't there. And this, you know, there isn't too much more to this experience except that this thing finally went by. These two men are standing there completely dumbfounded, and they both just look at each other and they say, well, you know, what do we do? And they say, well, we don't talk about it. And I know that this, of course, is like many other cases in ufology, and I guess that's the best, the good news and the bad news. It's strictly anecdotal. Can I prove that this happened? No, I can't. Do I think the witness was credible? Yes, I do. I'm more interested in what this means, because if it's a true report, it means that there could be way more going on around us all the time that people are not even seeing. In other words, whoever they are, they apparently could come and go, and we wouldn't necessarily even be aware that they're there.
You, you raised some points about that, James, that originally when I got involved in ufology, I was just interested in nuts and bolts. I figured it's a ship. I'm going to run up there with a microphone and knock on the door, and somebody's going to talk to me sooner or later. But there's something else going on in this camouflage situation you just talked about. I've heard other people say similar things. What about the other report?
The other report happened, interestingly enough, on the edge of Hanford, which, of course, is a nuclear facility in eastern Washington. And it was on an interstate highway 15 miles out of a town called Union Gap, and this one happened on June 29th of 1996. And I got this report probably 10 years after it happened. Now, of course, a lot of times you tend to discount things that people tell you that happened years ago. But I've also found that a lot of these cases are really worth digging into. This one in particular I was fascinated by because when I started interviewing the man, I knew that there was something he wasn't telling me that he wanted to disclose, but he wasn't quite sure how. And what happened was, it was late at night, he was with his girlfriend, they're going down this freeway, eastern Washington, again, we're in the summertime, it's very hot, the weather's nice, there's not a cloud in the sky. They go by this field, and things kind of all happen at the same time. He sees a car pulled over and a man standing partway out in the field, and about the same time he realizes what he's looking at. What he's looking at is the classic saucer-type craft, and it's hovering. And he got out of his car. His girlfriend stayed in the car. He started to approach the man. And as he gets closer to this thing, they're probably like between 50 and 100 feet away, he notices several things. The craft appears to be having some sort of a ground effect. In other words, some kind of field or air coming off of it is flattening the vegetation. It has a distinct outline. It, like I said, the classic saucer shape, but it's also flashing symbols. He kept coming back to the fact that it flashed symbols over and over again. In fact, I talked to him several more times over the next few months, and he was very upset by that aspect of it, what was flashed into his mind. While he's standing there, he was trying to make conversation with this man who never responded to him and seemed to be just focused in on this. And at that point, his girlfriend, who stayed in the car, became hysterical and started screaming and crying. He decided to run. He turned and ran back to the car, jumped in his car, and drove away. And the other thing that really bothered him that he wanted to tell somebody was that he felt very, very guilty that he didn't do anything for the man he left behind. And it turned out that this guy was an off-duty cop. And he felt bad because he left that other guy standing there.
And we don't know what happened to that other guy, huh?
We don't know.
Yeah. Thanks very much, James Clarkson.
Thank you for this opportunity.
And we'll be talking to you again soon. have some other interesting stories and reports and investigations you've done I want to talk to our audience about at a later date. We'll bring you back in September or October. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll have some words, a commentary on MUFON coming up before the weekend, when, of course, we have the 2011 symposium. That's out of the Hyatt Regency in Irvine, California. You might go out there and learn a little bit about UFOs. Some great speakers, including George Filer, Linda Moulton Howe, the astronaut, he'll be there, Corey Musgrave, a lot of people. And might see some fireworks, too. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, cheers.